Hello and welcome to Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. Friends, I'm recording this on Saturday from the North OKC soccer fields where my kids are both at soccer tryouts. Friday, as you may know, the legislature has adjourned sine die. We have reached the end of the first regular session of the 60th legislature, and they can't hurt us anymore, at least not directly and not for a few months. But what a wild and rocky last 2 days, 48 hours or so of the legislative session. I want to say that it's something that I've never seen before, and like the specifics are, but the general sentiment and the feel is all too familiar, right? So let's go back about a week. Earlier this week, the governor signed the big tax cut bill, right? This has gotten a lot of press, despite the fact that it doesn't do that much for you and I. It does benefit the wealthy, and mostly it hurts the state overall. And I expect we'll have a much longer episode about this in the future, but for right now, the basic tenets of the tax cut bill is that it eliminates the bottom three tax brackets, which theoretically kind of, just for state income tax, it kind of helps some lower income folks. It reduces the top income tax rate 0.25%. So functionally, for most people, this will save us. The estimates from both inside the legislature and from OK Policy are that it'll save us about $3 a week. The less you make, the less you save, I think. And conversely, the more you make, the more you save. So if you're in the top tax bracket, if you're making, I don't know, over $1 million, over $500,000, something like that, you're going to save, $3,000 a year, which is quite a bit more than $150. More importantly is that when all of that income tax money is put together in the same pot, which is what taxes do, altogether, that's about $360 million every single year. And that's money that we have today that goes into the state budget that is used to fund, I don't know, anything. Schools, transportation, roads, bridges, hospitals, disability services, driver's license, all the things the state does, the National Guard, the general fund, right? The general revenue fund is I think the majority of it comes from, or a plurality of it comes from state income tax. And that means that moving forward, every year, we're going to have less and less money. Over the next 10 years, that means Oklahoma will not have about $4 billion, 3.6 if it goes up, $4 billion over the next 10 years. Think about how many times that we discuss, right, on this podcast, at home, at current public events, the need for Oklahoma to truly invest in things like public education, where we are currently 49th in the country, and have fallen, right, from 17th, just like 11 in the last decade. We've really a fall from grace in our public education. We are going to have a bunch of big, expensive roads and bridge projects that are going to need money. We're going to need to have money to incentivize businesses to come. Hell, that's something the governor should normally get behind. There's a lot of things we're going to need money for, just the operations of our state. And if we are kneecapping ourselves and cutting taxes for the sake of saying you cut taxes, I think what's going to happen in just a few years, the legislature is going to have to come back and find a way to undo this tax cut. Why do I think that? Well, because we've done it twice before. Once was about 10 years ago, ironically, in 2016 and 2017 with this massive budget crisis. And that led to the teacher walkout. It led to the Step Up and the Step Up Plus and the Step Up Plus Plus tax plans. It is extraordinarily difficult for legislators to raise taxes in Oklahoma. They have to have, by the constitutional rule now, they have to have a 75% supermajority in both chambers in order to raise taxes. It's only happened, I think, twice in the last 40 years. Once was in 1990, and then again in 2017, because it's become so hard. And so that's why you often hear people that are concerned about the fiscal stability of our state saying, don't cut them if you're not just like absolutely rolling in the dough, and we are not. but don't cut them because it makes it harder to raise them in the future should we ever need to. And there are times that we might need to. So I'm certain that this will be in the news for the next few weeks, maybe not for a year or two, but it's going to come back, right? And if, by golly, if we're still doing this podcast at 500 episodes, I won't at all be surprised if we're talking about it, about the impact of these Stitt-era tax cuts, you know, in another 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So besides that, so the governor signed his tax cut bill, and then he did not sign the budget package bills, right? There's like 50-odd bills part of this package. He did not sign those. He allowed them to become law without his signature. So it's like a pocket signature, essentially. He doesn't have to sign them. Basically, if the governor doesn't veto it, if he vetoes it, it's done. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. If he vetoes it, you know, it stops, at least temporarily. But if he can either sign it or just let it become law. And he's done that for a lot of bills. I would say maybe 300 bills this session, a lot. And I haven't gone back to see if we can find historical data on this, but it just felt like every bill I saw come through this year became law without the governor's signature, which makes me wonder, like, why doesn't he want his name on these things? What's he planning? So this is the third time that the governor has not signed the budget. He vetoed it once or twice and then just allowed it to become law without his signature. This time, and you know, that's his little way. He can say, this is not the budget I want. He doesn't have to agree with it. He can oppose it and allow it to still become law. Now the governor did veto a lot of bills this session. I think 68 is the final count, which is, it seems like it's more than usual. And I need to go back to with these final numbers now and see, but when last I looked, before the budget bills, it was like 13% of all the bills that had gone to his desk he had vetoed. And the legislature, we knew they were going to probably overturn some of these, but golly, they came back, and Thursday night was just wild. Well, Thursday all day was wild. They gaveled in around the usual 10 a.m., and they got to work. So the way a veto override works is that it has to go back to the chamber of origin, like, so the chamber in which it was first proposed, and be the override vote has to happen there, and then it goes to the opposite chamber to be voted on as well. So you have to have a two-thirds majority in both chambers in order to override. So it's a supermajority, which I believe in both chambers the Republicans can do entirely on their own if they were so inclined. And I think some of these, that's the way it happened. But what transpired on Thursday and Thursday night was really interesting. It's kind of inside baseball, but if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to guess you're probably into inside baseball of Oklahoma politics. So Thursday morning, they gaveled in and they got to work. They were discussing, by and large, they started with, in the House, the bill that's about, makes some big changes to, like, the National Guard system. It's a, you could describe it as an omnibus bill. It's does a whole lot. And I, from what I've read and remember hearing, it wasn't even that well explained during the presentation in the session. And so they, it passed in the House pretty easily. And so it goes over to the Senate, like, kind of immediately. And the House keeps going and they're just cruising through, you know, veto, like, overturn. Each one really took only about as long as it took them to, like, read the boilerplate phrasing, right? Like, clerk will read, blah, 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 blah. Here's a vote. Who's going to present it? Like, it's just, like, the same thing over and over and over again. So each bill takes, I don't know, 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes. Almost no debate about any of the overrides. It was kind of going through. And at some point, the House, after a couple of hours, said, hang on, we're gonna slow our roll. Until the Senate can catch up, and we want to ensure that the Senate is going to also override this National Guard-related bill. And so they, I guess it was around 2 o'clock, so they took a recess and were waiting on the Senate. And the Senate put it up for a vote, And they needed 32 votes to pass it. And it got to 30, so too shy of enough, and it kind of held. And not everyone was there. Notably, Senator Adam Pugh, who is a veteran himself, was out of town. He was in, I think, Washington, D.C., and so wasn't there to vote on anything. And then there's a few folks who hadn't voted, and it kind of stalled out. And then you realize, oh no, they don't have the votes. And so then the negotiating starts happening, right? The horse trading, the people on the floor are talking, they're going in the hallway, they're going in offices, and they're just holding the vote open. 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, they held the vote open. If you've ever been at the Capitol when they're voting, they ring bells to like signal from each chamber. So these are the Senate bells that are ringing like over and over and over again for 5 hours. It will make you insane. As if everything else about the Capitol and politics won't, the bells will really get you. So they just held it open for hours. At some point, according to Twitter, someone had spoken with Senator Pugh. He was getting on a plane to fly back from D.C., and they were going to send some, you know, state troopers to pick him up at the airport and whisk him to the Capitol so he could cast the deciding vote. But that wouldn't happen until like 11, a little after 11 o'clock, and they were supposed to adjourn by midnight, but they ended up suspending that rule so they could go late anyway. In the end, once that plan, I think, became clear, and a few guys got what they wanted out of negotiations, they flipped to yes, and that bill went through. And that was really the logjam holding things up. So after that, they really kept going. So I was at home putting together some flat pack furniture, as one does, right? And listening to the legislative session. And when I'd been reading on Twitter and texting with a few people, and then by the time I tuned in, which was like around 9:30 or so, they had just cast that vote and were moving. And I was just listening to the Senate, and when I turned it on, I don't remember who it was, somebody was like full on yelling about the governor. And I had kind of seen something on Twitter as I was like getting my tools and video stuff set up. And apparently what happened here late, right? So let me back up. Earlier in the day, legislative leadership had gone to the governor and said, hey, we're going to overturn a bunch of your vetoes. And according to Senator Paxton, the pro tem, even the governor agreed with some of them, because he vetoed them, but then found out new information later and was like, oh, I shouldn't have vetoed it, but here we are. So he was, allegedly was okay with it. But they also told him that something else was going to happen, and I'll come back to that. So there was something made the governor very mad, and so the governor put out a statement about it. He also did some videos. He's been doing these videos lately. He's probably trying to, you know, game the algorithm, which I can relate to. But anyway, he put out some video statements about this stuff that was upsetting to the legislature. And so at the time they started doing veto overrides, or the time they spoke to the governor, they estimated they might veto 20 of his 68. Well, when they told the governor that they were also going to impeach and, or I don't know if that's the right word, but remove the commissioner of the Department of Mental Health, Allie Friesen, that they were going to remove her from office, which I don't think has ever happened in state history, that really made the governor mad, and he put out this statement that was pretty long, and it alleged that basically that Representative Josh West and Senator Paul Rossino were doing something to cover up something at the Department of Mental Health, and kind of, how to phrase it, insinuated that Senator Rossino's wife, who's a part-time employee at the Department of Mental Health, that somehow she was involved in the financial shenanigans over there. And that really upset Senator Rossino, as well as, you know, the rest of the Senate. And because of that, well, because of those two things. So one, the governor put out this video that just made everyone kind of upset. And he, I'll see if I can find him, scrolling. Non-Doc has two really lengthy articles about this that are really helpful. And, oh yeah, so basically the governor's video, like, called for all of those legislators, anyone who votes against his vetoes, that he's going to run someone to primary them, right? Take them out from the right, which is what they're all most afraid of anyway. So everybody, you know, leadership, the attorney general, you know, got involved. He said, this isn't leadership, it's bullying. You know, and so then, of course, the governor's office fires back. In fact, the governor's press secretary tweeted from his own account and said, so Gittner Drummond believes the legislature knows best. Is this how Gittner intends to lead? Greenlighting every little thing the legislature wants? Problematic and spineless. Go read why our governor vetoed their shit bills. So, like, okay, now it's just getting ugly. And because of that, they were so upset about it, leadership said, all right, everybody, if you had a bill that was vetoed and you can get the votes, we'll run it. So basically, like, let them run every veto override for which they can get the votes. So at the end of the day, they ended up overturning 47 or 48 of the 68 vetoes. So almost two-thirds of the governor's vetoes got overturned. And that included some bills that I've been supporting, right? House Bill 1389, which from Representative Provenzano would have expanded requirements for breast cancer screening. There was some other bills that, there's a lot. So, like, trying to keep them all in my head at once is hard. There was the bill that eliminated, well, it was a bill that would have continued the funeral home board and another one for a similar, the kind of state board. And the governor had vetoed those, which really threw into question what was going to happen with those. And so those got overturned, so those boards are still there. There was a bill, House Bill 1178, that creates a misdemeanor crime for a not disabled person to falsely claim that they have a service animal and or to use a service animal to gain benefits that are afforded to disabled people. So basically, you can't, like, allege that your dog is a service animal when it's not, or you haven't been approved for it, kind of thing. I think is what they're trying to get at. There's a bill to create an office in the AG's office to enforce the Open Records Act, or Open Meeting Act. Just a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, all kinds of, several that deal with just license plates. Like, there's just a bunch of bills the governor vetoed for sometimes nonsense reasons. Some that are good, like the new income tax credit for childcare professionals. There was a bill to expand the scope of work or scope of authority for nurse practitioners, and another bill for physician assistants. The governor vetoed both of those, and the legislature overrode those vetoes. So it sounds like, I think it's independent practice, right? Or the prescriptive authority for nurse practitioners and for physician assistants. So those are going to be law. Just a whole bunch of stuff. House Bill 2263 prohibits drivers from holding or using a cell phone while driving through a school zone, which I thought the law already did that, but maybe it's an additional crime. Anyway, just a lot of stuff. So then it came, so when I turned it up, so they had been just going through this, and they had the news had already come out that they were going to remove Commissioner Friesen. And then they did. And that that conversation, that debate was lengthy, to say the least. And, I mean, I don't know if it was a majority of the Senate. It sure felt like it. Members from both parties spoke in debate. Only one person spoke against it and voted against it, and that was Senator Shane Jett, who echoed the governor's comments, basically. And then the senators were pissed at him. It was wild, listening to some of the things they said. Someone, you know, insinuated that maybe the governor isn't fit to lead. Maybe, like, there was just all kinds of stuff there. And then eventually Senator Julie Daniels kind of brought it back home and said, hey, like, listen, a lot of stuff's happened today, but at the end of the day, this is an agency that's clearly been plagued by financial problems for years. Commissioner Friesen has been in the office for 15 months, more than one whole year, more than one whole budget cycle. She has not fixed the problems, nor has she even like identified the source of them yet. You know, maybe she could have been good if the agency was in good shape, but she's not the right person for this job. And for that reason, we should vote her out. And they did. So it was a almost unanimous vote there. So, all in all, a big deal. I think everybody was extra glad to be done. I don't know that it was the most contentious last week of session that I can recall, but it was one of them for sure. Every year, I think, you know, I should make a note on the calendar that, like, expect chaos the last 2 weeks in May, because that's what we get every year. What happens now? So, the legislature's done. They're gone. They're home. They're going on vacation. Lobbyists are going on vacation. No one's going to be at your meeting for the next 2 weeks. Then they'll come home and do whatever they're doing this summer, right? Interim studies will begin sometime middle of the summer, and we'll talk about those when we get there. But for right now, there's like a little bit of quiet after the storm, at least from the legislature. Now, you may have also seen the news this week, and it's not firm news, but Oklahomans United was the group that kind of kickstarted the Yes on 836 open primaries campaign, has strongly hinted that they are at least looking at filing a lawsuit to block Senate Bill 1027, which we've discussed previously, made all kinds of terrible changes to the state's initiative petition process. So I would expect over the next month, we might see something about a lawsuit or two or three, who knows, who else is going to file something there. We'll keep you up to date on that. And then I would say, on our end, even if there's a lawsuit, even if the lawsuit is successful in blocking the bill in whole or in part, we can't keep doing this, guys. Like, we cannot keep playing defense every year on the initiative petition, where we are about to lose it entirely. And the one thing that we should use it for is to make it stronger and to protect it, right? Like, we still have a chance, especially if there's a lawsuit and especially if it's successful. But even without it, we still have a chance of running an initiative petition about initiative petitions, right? To change the system in the law and rewrite it in such a way that the legislature has firm boundaries on what they can and cannot do, right? There's a lot of things that are in the Constitution about it already, and those are pretty solid. But there's this other stuff that's in the statutes, in the state law, that the legislature has passed and is now rolling back or making more difficult every single year. And so we have this opportunity now to change all of that, right? To take that stuff out of statute and put it in the Constitution and build this thing the way it was designed, which is the way it was intended, which is a tool of the people and by the people to have a direct voice in democracy, not just relying on on the Republic, right? On the elected officials to do things. There are plenty of times in our history, in the past and undoubtedly to come, where the legislators are not going to pass legislation that is needed because it affects them, right? We've talked before about how the legislature exempted themselves from the Open Records Act and Open Meeting Act. Almost every other public body is subject to the law except the legislature. Okay, well, that's not okay. We can't change that, though, because they won't do it on their own. And so that's the kind of thing where we need the initiative petition so that we can make those changes. Likewise, the creation of the Ethics Commission, which was created in response to rampant corruption in our state, that was created by the people using the initiative petition. But the rules back then were easier than they are now. Creating term limits for legislators so that people like Gene Stipe aren't sitting in office for 20 or 30 years, doing a corrupt across the state. For every good legislator that I wish could stay longer, there's two bad ones out there. There's no way that legislators would have done that for themselves. That was something that the people had to bring up on their own. Again, and they passed that when the initiative petition was easier to use. Not easy, but easier. Now that they've made it so hard, we've got one shot to fix it. So over the next few weeks, I'm going to start hosting, and I need your help hosting these two. I think we've just got to start hosting as many meetings as we can. We'll call them town halls. We can call them a salon. You can just call it a house party, whatever. But let's get people together, everybody we know, right? And say, hey, we're going to talk about the niche petition. You know, we're inviting Andy from Let's Fix This. We'll get some other people in here that are knowledgeable. But I want to have as many meetings as we can. And I want to train you, friends, listeners, about the initial petition so you can have these conversations too. And we've got to really quickly have as many conversations as we can. We need town hall meetings all across the state about this. And we need to come up with a plan for what we want it to look like and how we're going to start raising money so we can do an initial petition. This is grassroots at its core, right? Like, this is how every good campaign has started. This is how Oklahoma's done it for years, for a century. This is how other states have done it. And it takes all of us, right? So you cannot wait for Andy to have meetings about this and host everything. I am one person. We've got an army of volunteers. I'm going to be sending emails to them. If that's you also, expect to get an email in the next week. But we've got to start doing that this summer, right? Have a barbecue and ballots of whatever, you know, pints and politics, whatever your thing you want to do is. You have a running club and you want to have a guest speakers for 5 minutes before we all run together, great, hit me up. Like, we'll make this happen. You work at a restaurant, you want me to come talk to your staff or get someone to come talk to your staff, great, we'll make it happen. Like, we can do this. So if you don't already get our email updates, please go to letsfixthis.org and sign up. That'll be the most reliable way to get information straight from us. I don't send a ton of emails. I probably should send more. I just do it when it matters. If you are interested in helping get the word out, send me an email right now, andy@letsfixthis.org. Just send it to me. They all come to my inbox one way or another anyway, but just send it to me and say, I want to help fix the initiative petition, and boom, we'll get out. We're going to have some sign-up things. It's really a matter of just how quickly I can create these, and so we're going to get to work. I've already got the idea for a slide deck in my head that we can all share and use, and we're going to just push, push, push. All right, that's it. Friends, decisions are made by those who show up. Thanks for listening to me as I shout, recording this in my car at the soccer fields. I hope you have a lovely June. We're going to do probably 2 more episodes so we get to 300 and then take a break. That'll give us time to kind of clean up all the debris coming after the legislative session storm. All right, until next week, enjoy the sunshine. Remember, decisions are made by those who show up.